If you listen to the name of the movie Isle of Dogs, you might hear a pun. I love dogs. And writer-director Wes Anderson does indeed seem to love dogs. In the film, he follows a pack of them who have been banished from the fictional Japanese city of Megasaki to a place called Trash Island. There, they meet a boy who's looking for the friend he lost.
Wes Anderson is known for stylish movies like Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, and Fantastic Mr. Fox, which, like Isle of Dogs, was done with stop-motion animation. The film features voices like Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Greta Gerwig, and, of course, Wes Anderson favorite Bill Murray. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about dogs and the people who love them on today's episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Bravo's Imposters. Follow Maddie, a con artist on the run, desperately trying to live an honest life, and her three bumbling victims who get swept up into the life of the con. The feds want to lock them up. A crime boss wants to do much worse. Every con has consequences. Imposter stars Inbar Levy, Rob Heaps, Parker Young, Marion Rendon, and features Uma Thurman. The new season premieres Thursday, April 5th at 10, 9 Central, only on Bravo.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair this week, film critic Chris Klimek. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, hi, Linda. I just have something in my eye, probably a piece of shrapnel
or
something. It's smoky in here.
Yeah. Well, Chris is our go-to guy for boxing movies, robot movies, and as it turns out, sad dog movies. We will get to you.
I am the new Pauline Kael, yes.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. We will get to you, Chris. Glenn, I'm going to start with you. How did you like Isle of Dogs?
I loved it. I mean, this shouldn't be surprising. I love Wes Anderson. There is an essay to be written, to be read by nobody but me, about why I react so positively to Wes Anderson and so coldly to Whit Stillman, another chronicler of twee affectless privilege, right? It seems on the surface that they vibrate on the same frequency, but they don't. And I think it is, A, that just Anderson's funny, and B, and more importantly, the thing that everybody dings him for, that kind of over-determined, hugely stylized arch quality to it, is what I just love. I just love it. I think it reflects a kind of intentionality, right? Everything is planned. Everything is shot within an inch of its life. And these dogs are great. But it's that intentionality that, you know, we'll talk about it, I'm sure. But like, mm-hmm. when everything is so considered and you have this homage to Kurosawa in all these shots, but you are paying homage to the popular culture of a culture and not the culture itself. So
exactly.
When I'm sitting there and I see sumo wrestling and I see sushi and I see taiko drums, I still love this movie, but it's like, why?
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it for sure. Stephen, what did you think?
It's so beautiful to look at. And it's so... It's got this tone of kind of whimsical melancholy. It manages to ride the center line between whimsy and sadness without ever really, to me, being that funny or that emotionally affecting. It's so careful. He's such a careful filmmaker, and I have really loved a lot of Wes Anderson's movies, and I have so much to like and so much to admire about the way this movie is made, but it just kept leaving me a little cold. I haven't even quite been able to put my finger on what it is about it. I appreciate that he's going for layer upon layer of large-scale metaphor. It's a migrant story. It's a story about treatment of the other in a society. You have echoes of the Holocaust and concentration camps. You have the treatment of Japanese Americans in internment camps in World War II, a cruel and corrupt government, the polluted post-nuclear wasteland. There's a lot going on here, but the way that it's packaged in such an incredibly airless, tidy way, I just wasn't ever quite able to get all the way into it. I felt exactly about this movie the way I felt about its trailer, which is like, that's pretty. I don't know.
You know, I think its airlessness is what Glenn loves about
it. That's exactly what I was about to say.
You know, it reminds me when you say that, it reminds me of I think it was Julia Child who was quoted saying about Nouvelle Cuisine, when Nouvelle Cuisine came in and it was these tiny little portions and they were very, very beautiful on the plate. She said, It's so, so beautiful that you can just tell somebody's fingers have been all over it. It's a famous quote that I often think about because Wes Anderson to me is a little bit like that. There's a difference between admiring the final product and being able to really feel the work being done. I enjoyed this movie quite a lot. I found the story very sweet. I did find the story very affecting. Now, as everyone knows, if you follow me on Twitter, I just adopted a dog. And I think if you have love in your heart for adoption of dogs, you understand the relationship that brings this boy, whose name is Atari, to look for his dog, whose name for some reason is Spots. That's a very appealing story in its own way. And I actually really loved it as storytelling, and I love all of the stuff about this pack of dogs kind of hanging out. The fact that the Jeff Goldblum dog is always saying, oh, did you hear the gossip about this? I mean, it's such a weird, funny idea, and the fact that a pack of dogs would naturally have a gossip, I think is such a fun idea. I think Bill Murray is very well and very lightly used here. Yeah. He's obviously a Wes Anderson staple, but I enjoy that dog. I enjoy so many aspects of this film. I want to hear what Chris has to say because Chris was so excited for this movie. You were the most pumped person.
Well, I love Wes Anderson, and I have a doggy-shaped void in my heart, which I have not filled, as you happily have now been able to do. When I went to the screening of this film, the first one, I sat between Glenn and my friend Rachel Mantufel, whose complaint coming out of this was like, well, they didn't seem doggy enough. They're just the Wes Anderson characters with the usual Wes Anderson neuroses and stuff. And
I said, well, they're
sure. And I said, well, have you met Glenn's dog, Dex? Because he's a very sad, kind of reflective dog.
Soulful.
Yes. Actually, I clearly in the tank for Wes Anderson. His filmography divides into the stuff that I loved immediately and the stuff that I loved when I saw it later.
Oh, interesting.
But I do, like, the experience that Steven had does resonate with me. I certainly felt that way about The Life of Aquatic and about The Darjeeling Limited. A lot of movies where I felt like the specificity of its tone felt like the absence of a tone or the failure to make a choice. Like, am I supposed to be primarily sad? Am I supposed to be primarily amused by this? But I didn't have that sort of split on this movie. I was pretty much all in right away.
Yeah. I think that I loved the story and the dogs and the personalities of the dogs in exactly the way that I was supposed to. The place that I got hung up a little bit was the Japanese setting and the way in which Glenn was talking about it's not the culture itself, it's the popular culture idea of the culture. And there are several, I do want to direct you, if you want to read more about this, there are several critics who have talked quite a bit about this. Justin Chang in the LA Times, Angie Han at Mashable, and Inku Kang on Twitter has gone into some detail about this. But in a way, every world that Wes Anderson creates is a fake, is a very artificial world. And so what you're getting here to me is not Japan. And it's not even pop culture Japan. It's a white American movie lover's idea of Japan that comes entirely from film and video games and music and things like that, mostly film. So I think there's a lot to be taken away from the fact that the kid's name is Atari.
Yeah.
It's sort of the most kind of Gen X white kid idea of, you know, what would I name? Atari, sure, okay. Megasaki. I mean,
see, this is, I mean, I'm so wary of saying this.
Yeah,
I know that I'm starting a fight here, but I do have a similar response to some of this that I do to the many aggrieved responses to Three Billboards, where Martin McDonagh is being Martin McDonagh, the same Martin McDonagh he's been for 20 years, but now he's doing it in America,
right,
or a fictitious American city.
Yeah.
And I do recognize why that's a problem. But yeah, Wes Anderson, I mean, he had a fake Italian film festival in The Life Aquatic with some very stereotypical representations of Italian cineasts or just European cineasts. Royal Tenenbaums is not really in real New York. I mean, there's a phony 375th Street Y. It's sort of an imaginary New York, maybe the New York he imagined from Texas.
Yeah.
You know, I do understand that it's not exactly the same thing when we're crossing an ocean here, but
it's not.
He does do this in pretty much all of his movies,
right? Yeah. But to me, it's not like, well, Wes Anderson always does this, therefore it's fine. Like that doesn't really answer the question. And I think maybe to me, First of all, I do think there's a big difference between a white American director who creates a fictional idea of New York.
There is a Japanese screenwriter on this film. We should point that out.
There is a Japanese writer who I think contributed to the story.
Yeah.
And I understand that and I get that. And yet, to me, what you're still getting, and there's the Justin Chang piece in particular and the Angie Han piece both talk about this. The decision to have the dogs speak English and the Japanese people speak unsubtitled Japanese. I mean, I get the fact that the characters you relate to are the dogs, but why do they have English language names? Why are the dogs named King and Boss when the boy is named Atari? If you're going to have them speak English because you're translating their barks, why wouldn't they at least still be Japanese dogs? Why do they need to be coded as American dogs? Believe me when I tell you, I don't want to be talking about this. You know, I hate the fact that a film that I think is so emotionally lovely is Japan is not Narnia. Japan is not Hogwarts. You can't just make it up and say, well, this is my fictional idea of Japan, and not expect people to have an issue with that.
Yeah, I think he does expect people to not have an issue with it. I think he thinks that his affection for the popular culture of Japan will inoculate him against criticism. Or maybe he just didn't even consider it. I think it's likely. That's the thing that strikes me about it. Like, this guy considers everything. Everything is thought through, and for that to be this little thing there. And they did bring in Kunichi Nomura to help on the story. He said in interviews that he was brought in for, you know, cultural sensitivity.
Right. And he's the voice of Mayor Kobayashi, the villain of this movie.
Yeah. The experience of watching this film is going to be, I love this, you know, every so often.
And that's how I think that's, if I really had not liked it, right, I would be much less frustrated by the fact that I don't, and this is the way that Angie Han actually frames her piece in Mashable. Why is this set in Japan? Mm-hmm. And it seems like the reason why it's set in Japan is that he thought it would be fun to play with those aesthetics.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that is sort of the textbook definition of cultural appropriation, right? That you, without really caring much about the significance of cultural things, you think that some of what you think of as the signifiers are cool. Mm-hmm. And you can love them and have think they're cool, and yet to borrow them without much regard for context. And of course, there's no historical context here because it's not real Japan. Mm-hmm. It's in the future, so it's not Japan right now. You don't have to think about the world very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at the same time, I mean, he certainly appropriates, as you say, Japanese culture to beautify the images on the screen and to busy up the images on the screen. I do think it does allow him to make some interesting storytelling choices. I did appreciate the way that the dogs are so centered in this movie as the voices and as the narrators of the movie, and having the boy rescuer be untranslated, almost like a parent in a Peanuts cartoon, if you don't speak Japanese, mm-hmm. does allow the focus of the film to be on the story of these dogs. It's constantly kind of recentering you on the story of the dogs, which is the sort of most appealing thing about the story being told, is the relationships between these dogs. I completely hear you.
I think we can all agree that he has found in dogs a really good vehicle for the Wes Anderson thing. Mm-hmm. Because you, like, especially this cast, Bryan Cranston's voice is instantly recognizable, and it seems like it's not Bryan Cranston playing a dog, it's Bryan Cranston. He's not pushing. Jeff Goldblum is Jeff Goldblum.
I think all of them made that decision.
Yeah.
They just sound like guys talking.
And there is a disconnect there, because when we see animation, we expect people to be talking at the top of their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it is so pulled back, and these dogs don't have facial expressions, they have very expressive eyes.
Yes.
Which is so remarkable that it is, as affecting as a movie as it is, when all that's moving from frame to frame are just these incredibly rich, soulful eyes. I think it really lines up with who he is as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
No matter what else.
No, I really, like, I just keep thinking about it because I really did admire exactly what you're talking about. There are some kind of still shots of dogs with their little puppet fur kind of ruffling that are so charming and warm and that really do tap into what dogs are like. There's a wonderful sequence at the beginning where two groups of dogs are kind of facing off, trying to figure out whether to have a fight. And it's so funny and it's so clever and sort of There's an almost Chuck Jones kind of nature to the cartoon fighting that I thought was really...
I think that's one of the scenes where we get one of the Kurosawa music cues, because there's music from The Seven Samurai, I think, in that scene, and also from Drunken Angel.
Yeah. And I will add, I think the dogs work really well. I think Atari works really well as a character. I don't think the Greta Gerwig American Exchange student...
That was the thing that
the
I came out with,
hair.
Kind of feeling like, why was that in there?
I don't think that works
I thought
at
that
all.
Was bad.
Well, and that's the thing, is it's all related, because then you have the one human being that you get to hear is the white exchange student. And the, I mean, it's just, it's all part of the same thing. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, but I am... heartened that the conversation out there is a nuanced one. Nobody is saying he should never have made this film, and nobody's saying he has every right to make this film any way he wants. It's everybody is kind of somewhere on that spectrum, and that's the way it has to be. You know, these are tough questions to ask. This is a tough thing to do, and the conversation has to be not pushed to the extreme, but sort of, it's a film you wrestle with.
I think for me, the clue that let me in right from the beginning is these opening titles where we see these three taiko drummers playing the theme while the credits are up, and behind them there's a basketball hoop. Like, they're in a gymnasium, you know, they're not in a, like, the National Opera House or whatever. They're not in some, you know, representative building that's, you know, government funded and stuff. I mean, clearly they're doing this in sort of a found venue, right? And that's never explained. You know, we're never told where they are or even how they fit into the story. But the fact that they're doing this in a gym, that's kind of a clue.
Like, based on everything I know about Wes Anderson, it means he likes what basketball hoops look like. Well, I will be really curious to hear what all of you think about Isle of Dogs. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Chris on Twitter at CTClimic. Thank you for being here, pal.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you all on Friday when we will be talking about one of the most anticipated films of this spring, Ready Player One. See you then.
Hi, I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Mindy Thomas.
And together, we bring you Wow in the World,
NPR's podcast for families.
Every week, we explore wild and new scientific discoveries.
We also ride a bird. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.